Welcome to the Perkins Platform. This is a solutions-oriented podcast and live radio show. Each broadcast, we dedicate just about 30 minutes to explore topics of interest for leaders and professionals in education and a variety of other disciplines. And this is your host, Brian Perkins. So welcome, everyone. I am really, really excited today because we're stepping outside of what I would say has been kind of our typical guest, not in the sense of accomplishment, because as you know, we've had some really well-accomplished guests on this show, and today is no exception, and probably is one of, hands down, one of the most recognized and applauded authors that I've had on this show. And so I'm going to introduce you today to someone who is a professor of humanities in our Department of African American and African Diaspora Studies at Columbia University. She's written a number of books, and I can't even spend the whole 30 minutes telling you about all of the prizes she's won for her writing, including a National Book Critics Circle Fiction Prize, Greywood, and has a book that's coming up, a essay collection for Greywood, Grey Wolf Press, and it just goes on and on. So I'm pleased to introduce you to Edwige Dendika. Welcome, Edwige.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, so glad to have you. And I have to tell you, I've just been really stricken by your background in terms of your history. And so I'd love for you to just tell, I've read a little bit, but I'd love to know. I know you are native Haitian, Haitian born, and immigrated to the United States from an early age. Tell us a little bit about your background. And as an author, I know from reading a number of your pieces that you lean heavily on your experiences in growing up, and your experiences also in as an immigrant to the United States. So please tell me a little bit more about your process and how you've become such a acclaimed writer using this as a source of your inspiration.
Well, once again, thank you so much for having me. So as for my background, I was born in Haiti in 1969. My parents immigrated to the U.S., my dad when I was two, my mother when I was four, and I joined them when I was 12. So mm-hmm. I stepped in Brooklyn, New York when I was 12 years old in 1981. And it was a very interesting time in New York because people were just in the United States starting to talk about AIDS, what they called GRID then. And Haitians, you know, I'm Haitian born, we were the only people who were identified by nationality in that grouping. So if you can imagine, that made it very hard to go to school. Kids would call us names. And so I started really writing in that period as a kind of, as a way to process all that. I was a big reader. I was really shy. And there was nothing that like was more of a salvation to me at that time, to both my mind and spirit, than reading. So I started reading a lot. And then from junior high school and at Jackie Robinson Intermediate School in Brooklyn, I went to Clara Barton High School. And from there, went to Barnard College. So actually being back on campus as a professor, I was first year on the, here on the Columbia campus as a student in the class of 1990.
Yeah. And I saw where you have a undergraduate degree in French literature, but you went and got your master's in fine arts and creative writing. I heard a little bit about your course, and I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that. The design of your course entitled Writing in the Presence of Ancestors. And I'll tell you a little bit why, but I had been writing myself, almost an autobiography, if you will, but it wasn't, it was intended to tell a story, but there was so much context that I had to put in that I felt like I had to rely on stories that I had been told. And so I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about this course, Writing in the Presence of Ancestors.
Well, yeah, when I knew that I was coming back here to Columbia and African American and African diaspora studies, I knew that I wanted to sort of launch my time here with a course that was meaningful to me and that would be meaningful to the students. It would be my first one. And as you mentioned, I have an MFA from Brown University. And really, I got my MFA. That was the process to my writing my book. You know, my thesis for my MFA was my first novel, Breath Eyes Memory. Ah. So I've always felt, you know, much like you, that I was, whenever I was writing in the presence of ancestors. I mean, I, you know, the expression of standing on people's shoulders. And in part because I was a big reader, and I was a big reader because I was told stories when I was growing up by the elders in my family. And I felt like I was walking in the lineage of these amazing writers who were, you know, Haitian novelists like Marie-Vieux Chauvet and Jacques Roumain, who had a book translated by Langston Hughes and Mercer Cook, and Toni Morrison, and all these writers, and Tozaki Shange, who was a student here at Barnard, Zora Neale Hurston, who was a student here at Barnard, Langston Hughes, who had come to Columbia for a bit. So I felt like I, not just in that lineage, which is sort of like a fancy lineage, but also in the lineage of the oral storytellers of my childhood, you know, these folks who guided me. And so I wanted to acknowledge that I was writing in their light. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to frame a course around it. So what we did in the course was pair classic works with younger scholars who had written about them. So for example, for Eddie Glaude, we read with James Baldwin, Imani Perry, her book Looking for Lorraine, we read with Lorraine Hansberry. And there's, you know, a book called Triangular Road by Paul Marshall that she wrote about her time spent traveling around Europe with Langston Hughes. So those pairings, and also it was an opportunity for students to realize that you can also, you know, you can also reflect, you can also sort of pair yourself up with writers, yes, even if they've passed on, because I've always told my students that all the mentors you need as writers are in the library, right? And I used to, when I was younger, you know, I had more time, used to make these little summer courses for me, for myself, where I would read the work of one writer chronologically. Mm. And I felt like that was such a big lesson for me, because you can see a writer grow just like as I was trying to grow. So I really wanted to shape that course in light of that, those experiences that I've had, and try to reproduce for my students within one semester that experience, a similar experience.
And you mentioned your first book, Breath, Eyes, Memory. That was actually a part of the Oprah Book Club selection. Mm-hmm. And then the other book that you have, if I'm pronouncing it right, Crick Croc. Was a National Book Award finalist, a tremendous honor to be there. I, you know, you've talked about kind of the opportunities, and I think about something that Dr. Maya Angelou said, and it has, since I heard it, it has really resonated with me, where she talked about not going into a room alone. You know, she talked about, because I take everyone with me, you know, all of the ancestors. And it just really struck me that of a way to think about being empowered, particularly as a Black writer, she was and you are, that it can be intimidating at times to be surrounded by people who don't identify with the same structures that you've been in terms of how you've been raised in a lot of ways, to think how you think about your family and the importance of family, the importance of community. So there are two ways I want to ask you about this, is that about the challenges first, the challenges that you see and you face. You've written brilliant short story collections and fiction. You had prizes in fiction. What do you see as that have been your biggest challenges to writing fiction and in the fiction space?
Well, I mean, I enjoy writing fiction so much. I mean, I think the challenges of fiction is always idea gathering or idea formation, right? And then trusting that whatever seed of an idea that you have will sustain over, like, if it's a novel, over several thousands, hundreds of thousands of words. If it's a short story, still, there's an economy to short stories, but it has to be even like a shinier gem, you know, kind of like poetry. So those challenges sometimes, you know, just, I'm the kind of writer that I really need focus. I need to feel like there's a stretch of blank time ahead of me, but I'm a mom, I have two daughters, so I don't always have that luxury. So I've had to learn to write around the time that I have between mothering, you know, being a parent, being a spouse, being an instructor now. So I think that's the balance that a lot of people who create, but also or parenting or a working phase, and trying to carve that space for your creativity. You know, another thing I always tell my students, because people tend to postpone, they're like, I'll write when I retire, or I'll write. And then when you find out that if you don't have that practice, if you of like squeezing the writing and the life you already have, it becomes very hard to suddenly start writing when you have like 24 hours. Yeah, sometimes too much time is intimidating as well. Like, I have many stories of friends who've been waiting years to go to a writer's retreat, you know, like a colony or someplace, and they get there, they're like, oh my gosh, it's too much
time. What do I do, right?
Exactly. What do I do with all this time?
Yeah, sure.
So it's important. I tell students that all the time, even if you have like half hour into the life that you currently have, try to build that in, because it builds that muscle. And it's also, you know, people don't talk enough about the discipline that art requires, right? So if you're a jazz musician, everybody knows you're practicing like for hours and hours, but for some reason they expect, like, if you're a writer, like the muse to just strike you and brilliance to come out.
Sure, sure. And you know, related to what I mentioned, you have 17 books to your credit and others coming out. So I haven't read all your books. And I was just wondering, so your inspiration, I guess, is where I'm going with it, by asking around the challenges to that, have you found it to be easier to write about the things that you know well? 'Cause sometimes that can be a distraction too. But is it the things that you know well? Or are you using completely your imagination to get things done?
Well, it's funny, because we were today, you know, this semester I'm teaching a class on the nonfiction of the writer and Tezaki Shange. Mm-hmm. And today that was the discussion in class, because there's a moment where she's saying, I'm going off to study poetry because I don't want people to assume that I have sort of this natural talent, right? And some of her, this is in an early, some early writings that in a book that's edited by Imani Perry. So, and Toni Morrison also would have that discussion, you know, because the very cliched standard writing advice is write what you know. And then she said, you know, assume you don't know anything. So I guess I fall somewhere in between. I definitely 100% draw on my personal experience, but I do a lot of research. Like I do a lot of research and I ask a lot of questions. And I think, you know, writers have, we have to do both. That's part of the craft, right? To you're inspired by something you know, by something you love, by something that haunts you, by something you can't forget. At the same time, the process of delving into it requires research, inquiry, and sometimes travel to actually see places and experience them in a way that you can write about them authentically.
Sure, sure. And you, I've read a number of fiction pieces where it just seems so real. And later on, I'll read about the author's process. And it involved a lot of research around it, because in some cases, it's easy to assume and easy to think that that sounded too real. That must have been the author's experience. And then sometimes you learn it wasn't their experience at all, but it was through their research. So that's about the kind of the challenges. What opportunities are there out there? I mean, given some of the topics and the content of what you're writing and what you've written about, what are the opportunities in that kind of genre of fiction do you see for others?
Well, I mean, I think one of the wonderful things about fiction is that there's such a broad range of, there's so many ways that a novel can be. You can have what's called a story cycle, which is connected stories. Novels can be epic, they can be long, they can be short. So I think the opportunities are in the probably the accessibility right now, right? Because my niece who writes, she writes science fiction. She started by writing like fan fiction on Wattpad, for example. So that was the way she practiced it, her craft. So I think there's now, one of the advantages is that there's, and again, this was coming up in class as well. We were talking about this book called The Sisterhood, where with these writers, Toni Morrison and Tazaki, they gathered together and created a writing group where they exchanged their work. So there's more opportunities for that. I think since the pandemic, people have done that on Zoom. Mm-hmm. People have, you know, done writers' workshop that way, in a way that they might not have considered in the past before the pandemic, right? Yeah. So there's these opportunities to gather, to find fellowship with people across the country and the same medium that we're talking right now. So I think that's a plus. That's a positive thing that we didn't have before. People have access to teachers and friends who can help them on this journey. That's like the sisterhood, right? Like that Toni Morrison and these writers had in each other. The second thing is there's online publications that folks can submit to, and some of them are just as hard to get in as, you know, as print publications, but others that are more lenient. And sometimes now there are opportunities to pitch to agents or to reach out to agents online, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's a somewhat of a bit more, that whole process is a bit more democratic in terms of people can really make themselves be seen, like can reach agents, can reach publishers differently if they publish in, you know, in journals online, because a line is kind of like an open space. So I think these are the spaces of opportunity that maybe we may not have, not in the past. Like someone can publish an article that 100,000 people read and then get called and said, oh, do you want to write a book? You know, and so that possibility of something going viral or at least semi-viral or those ways of reaching publishers did not exist in the past.
Sure, sure. And it's interesting you bring that up, because what I've talked with a number of my colleagues about is just that the whole idea, whether it's a short story or it could be an article that goes viral, that it's almost to the point where some of these print materials that and outlets are going extinct because you can make really big impact on in these relatively free spaces, right? You know, like you can get 100,000 people familiar in a week with your work in practically no time. So it just as an aside, that is just a really interesting point about how much the space has changed over just a relatively short time. So I want to ask you, so 17 books, which one is your favorite and why is that your favorite?
Sometimes I'm tempted to say that thing that parents say, we don't have a favorite. I don't have a favorite among my children, my actual children.
They but, say you do. Yeah. I know that feeling.
I know they each think the other one is. And that's how it should be, right? Yeah. My mom had four. It was harder. But there's one book which is nonfiction. It's called Brother, I'm Dying. It's a family memoir. For me, that's my favorite. And my favorite in the sense that it's a family story. Mm-hmm. It's something that I think future generations and my family can read and find like their lineage in. Yeah. Because I put in that book all the stories that my uncle who raised me when my parents were in New York, the stories he told me about the family, or the stories my father told me. And it so happens that they were both terminally, my dad was terminally ill, right as my uncle was getting, was dying in immigration custody in the US. So they both died within months of one another and within months of my oldest daughter, Mira, being born. Mm. So I was, it's a book about being caught in the cycle of life and trying to make sense of all these like two tragedies and a really wonderful thing at the same time.
Yeah.
Being in the gap, as they say in the church.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's in a lot of ways, my struggle has been around how much of, because that's extremely personal, obviously.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so just for you, as it was, something that you wanted people in your family to read, it's not going, obviously not going to be limited to them. And so the choice to make that those stories public, I'm sure are very difficult. And you want to make sure that you tell them in a way that does the original storyteller justice, that the way it was given to you, that you can do them a great service by repeating the story. And so were there any of your pieces that you felt were particularly difficult to kind of birth in this in your process, the way you write?
I mean, they all have, every piece has its own level of difficulty. Mm-hmm. I find for me, the most difficult thing is always beginning. Mm. And once I have a line or like, I need that first sentence. Until then, it's amorphous, it's an idea, it's something that could or could not be. But once I'm grounded in that first sentence, I'm like, oh, okay, I know where it's going. And I just follow that one to the next one, to the next one. So that's usually a challenge for me. Yeah. And sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night, like I'm thinking about, like, I want to write this, but I'm not sure. And then I'll wake up in the middle of the night with that one sentence. And then I know it's done. Like, mm-hmm. I know that I'll just have to like find the middle but that first sentence, hence towards the end, that's usually process wise the hardest thing for me. Once I have that beginning, I know I'm going to be okay.
Okay. So I have a number of students too that have aspirations to write and get, so in some cases it's, you know, it's information books on how you do something. Others have talked about, I have some students that have published children's books and fiction and you name it. What would be the advice, and what is the advice that you have given your students around? I know you just said, you know, kind of getting started is tough. But what advice would you give someone who, first time writer, they have a kind of an idea where they want to go, and but just to break that ice of getting started, what advice do you have?
Rewriting. I would say just sit, put aside maybe 20 minutes or a very unintimidating period of time where you sit down and you write freely and openly, like nobody's going to read it. And some of us are perfectionists, right? And we think, oh, it has to be perfect. And that could be sort of like what the enemy of the good or whatever, like you just, you don't get to it, and that leads to procrastination. There's the Julia Cameron, I think the writer is, who had a book called The Artist's Way. And she suggested these morning pages where you just first thing in the morning when you wake up, you start doing this free writing or whenever you can. I think to reclaim, my advice would be, especially if you feel like you're having difficulty, to go back and reclaim that space when writing was fun, when writing was free, when writing was yours, you know?
Yeah.
And that's harder to work with when people, you know, when there's expectations now, right?
Yeah.
When there are folks waiting to see what you're going to say, is it the same as before? Is it different than before? Mm-hmm. But there's so much value in going back to that place where you feel like this is my free space. This is where I'm, this is where I express myself. This is a kind of healing space. I think that's, or even playful space, right? Mm-hmm. That sense of going back to this first love, yeah. You know, I think to try to get that joy back, I think it helps a lot. And of course to read, because when we read, as I said, you know, going back to the beginning, when we read, we can see other models of what we want to do. Mm-hmm. So read similar things to what you want to do, and then just make the time, like discipline. People, like mm-hmm. I mentioned, people don't talk enough about discipline, like saying, this is the time I've set aside for this, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do it like I would going to the gym or something.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I know we're out of time now, but this has really added to me today. And I'm sure a number of people who are kind of eavesdropping in on this conversation will be inspired. And the books that you have written, a number of them that are award-winning books, have been listed on our site for people to be made aware of. And so I'm wishing you the best and you're in your classes, and you have an upcoming book. You want to talk a little bit, just briefly, to say what this upcoming book is, and then tell us where people who are just now being introduced to you might find your work, and social media handles, email addresses, anything you have where they can find you.
Well, I want to thank you for having me. You reached out right after this, you know, there was mention that I was here at Columbia. I appreciate it. So my book is, it's a book of essays coming out in the fall. It's called We're Alone, from Grey Wolf Press. My website is edwigedanticat.com, and there are links to older articles. They're there for folks who might want to read my articles, and also a list of my books. So you can just go to edwigedanticat.com for that.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. And thank you again. And until I see you on campus, go well, stay well.
Thank you. Likewise.